Joey just told how to use PowerGraph to compute on very large graphs on a huge cluster. I will tell you how to do it on a single Mac Mini. My name is Aapo Kyrölä, and this is joint work with my advisors Guy Blelock and Carlos Gestrin. So like we just heard, analysis of big graphs is a very hot topic. There's a lot of value in these graphs. Also, we heard in the keynote today that even in the genome, there is interesting structures to be learned about. Joey told a lot about what you can do with graphs, so I will emphasize only one point which is relevant to this work. Big graph problems are not really similar than rest of the big data. And why is that? It's really that, like actually we just heard, the data size is not that huge. Facebook just last week announced that they have 140 billion connections in the graph. Should I start over? They have about 140 billion connections in the graph, and it's definitely the biggest social graph there is. But you can fit it in one hard drive, let's say 1 terabyte. It's really not a problem. Instead, the computation itself, that's what's where the challenge is. Like we just heard, the natural graphs have very asymmetric structure. So let me give you an example. Lady Gaga has 30 million followers. I have about 300. My advisor has maybe his mom and dad. So these programs are really hard to scale. The computation is hard to scale because it's hard to split the problem into equal-sized parts. Well, PowerGraph did good work on that, but I'm going to ask that now, like I said, we can fit the problem on one machine, on a wide hard drive. Could we actually do the same computation as well on a single machine? And why do we want to do that? Why don't we just use the cloud, put the credit card in, and get some solutions back? Well, I want to take the first perspective of people who actually write these graph algorithms. It still happens that writing distributed algorithms is quite hard. Reasoning about distributed state. Some people, they write bugs. And trying to find out what happened when your cluster crashes remains to be quite challenging. Instead, if we could compute the same problems on just a single machine, you could just use your favorite IDE and your debugger. Quite curious, actually, motivation comes that actually, if we can solve this problem, you can get more efficient scaling in some cases. In the industry, they usually want to, they have many different tasks they want to compute on the same graph. For example, to compute personalized recommendations, they want to compute the same task for different countries, different interest groups, and so on. So before, in order to be able to handle this, a single task, you needed a cluster. And to make the computation run faster, you added more machines to your cluster. But if we can solve the problem of handling one task per one machine, that the single machine can actually handle the one big task, then we have a much simpler case. So with a little bit simplification, it's complex to handle a cluster, and it's expensive to scale. To double the computation throughput, you usually need to triple or quadruple the number of computers. But instead, if you can do it on one machine, it's very simple to manage, because nodes don't need to talk to each other, and doubling the machines means double the throughput. So let me now state the research goal of this project. And actually, the goal was the same when we started it and when we ended it. So we want to compute on the same graphs as you have seen with PowerGraph and other systems with billions of edges in a reasonable time, but on just a single PC, which we use the Mac Mini. And by reasonable, I mean that we want to solve the problems in roughly the same time or in the same ballpark. So let me now quickly review the computational model. It's actually very similar to what PowerGraph has. So first of all, we have a graph with directed edges. And here's some important terminology. in the top right. So if we have vertices A and B, and there's edge E between them from A to B, we call E an out edge of A and in edge of B. This becomes important soon. Now with each edge, we actually associate a value. And because of this, it might not be that you can actually fit this into memory. And this value can be of user-defined type. And the computation proceeds by modifying actually the values, these associated values, on edges and vertices. Later on, we also allow modifying the structure itself. The computation model is also similar than we just heard. It's called vertex-centric programming. So a user defines a function which is operates on a vertex, and it can modify the vertex value and its incident edges values. And then we run this function on all the vertices in turn. So let's now review that why this problem is not trivial. Because we assume that we cannot fit the graph actually in memory, that instead we have to process it from disk. And when you process a random graph from disk, you end up doing random access, which is slow on disks. So let me give you a simple example. So if we use a standard way to store a graph on a disk, on a file called adjacency list, what we have that for each vertex, we have a list of its in edges and its out edges, or out neighbors and in neighbors, and the values for them. So now if we update vertex number 5, shown on top, and it changes the value in the in edge from vertex 19, shown in red, then we need to do a random write to synchronize the value in the out edge list of vertex 19. We can, of course, do better. Instead of storing the edges two times, we, for example, decide that each vertex owns its out edges, and for the in edges, we just store a file offset, a pointer in the file where the edges. So in this case, we need to do a random read. So when we update vertex number 5, it needs to read from vertex number 19's out edge list the value. And while this is much way better than random write, still, to get to this reasonable performance, we would need to do millions of accesses per second. And even on SSD, this is not reasonable. So let's review a couple of solutions to this. So maybe we could try a generic solution. Use SSD as a memory extension. And this was proposed by a nice work called SSD Alloc and the NSDI last year. But like I said, even they have an innovative system, it can still do only roughly tens of thousands of accesses from the disk per second, and this is just not enough for us. Well, maybe we can actually fit the graph in memory by compressing it, and I mean compressing the structure of the graph. And there are some very nice work, for example, the WebGraph framework from the University of Milan, which can represent edges in only 3 or 4 bits. Well, but in our model, we actually associate a value with each edge, and they are mutated, and they are user-defined type. So it might be not possible to compress almost at all. The third idea comes from the fact that, for example, social networks, they have a lot of locality. People are connected to their people in their country, their company, and so on. So maybe we cluster the graph into these localities and process them one at a time in memory. Well, again, the problem is that finding this cluster, doing the partitioning, is actually rather expensive. And it just happens that on this natural graph, the number of inter-cluster edges is always high. And there's a lot of research on this. And finally, maybe we can cache the hot nodes, the Lady Gaga's, Obama's, Justin Bieber's, and process everything else from disk. Well, this has been also studied, and it can work in some cases, but it will lead to unpredictable performance. On some cases it works, some not. And our solution, which I will talk now, it delivers very predictable performance, which is one of the key aspects of it. It's called the parallel sliding windows, or PSW. So PSW processes the graph one subgraph at a time. So we load one subgraph from the disk into memory, then we compute the updates function on this subgraph, and then write the changes back to the disk. And we do this for all the subgraphs of the graph, and that's one iteration, one full pass. And then we start the next iteration. But how do we define these subgraphs? Well, let's assume we have vertices from 1 to n, number from 1 to n. And we divide these to p intervals. And these intervals don't need to be of same size. And now each interval of vertices defines one subgraph. And for each interval, we associate something we call a shard. Shard is a file on disk which contains all of the in edges of the vertices in this interval. Let me give you an example. So here is a toy graph with about 10,000 vertices. And we have divided it into four intervals of very different sizes. And what is key here that in each shard, we store the edges sorted by the source. So we have partitioned them by the destination, but we sort them by the source. And this comes important soon. So let's now decide that we want to load the subgraph of the first interval for vertices 1 to 100. Well, all the in edges will be now in shard number 1, because that's how we divided the edges. What about the out edges? Well, because we had sorted the edges in the shards by the source, they are actually in the beginning parts of each of these shards, shown in red. And now we have loaded these blocks into memory, and we have the whole subgraph for interval 1. What about the next interval? So now again, all the in edges for interval number 2 are in the shard number 2, and the out edges are just after the edges in the last previous interval. So as you saw, these red boxes, I call them sliding windows. So in each of the shard, we just slide down to find the next vertices, next edges. So what is key here is that on one interval, we needed only p large reads. So we read one shard completely in the memory, and then p minus one smaller blocks. And because for a full pass of the graph, we do p intervals. This means in total we do only p squared reads on one full pass. And now p is usually in the order of dozens. So this is very, it means only a couple of some hundreds or maybe thousands of random reads on one full pass. Now the second phase is computation phase. So now we have loaded this edges in the memory in these blocks, and what is important to understand here is that when we construct the subgraph in memory, for the edges we assign a pointers to these large blocks. So when now we run this update function on the vertices and they modify the edges, the changes are reflected in the blocks automatically or immediately. And this actually means that PSW implements the asynchronous model of computation. So all changes are immediately visible to subsequent computation. Now, the third phase, we want to write the changes back to the disk. So we had loaded these large blocks from the disk, so we just write them back where they came from, to the disk. And again, we needed to do only p large writes. So we did equal writes as we did reads. So this means that this model works both on SSD and hard drive. All right, so let's go to talk about the implementation quickly and then a little bit about the evaluation. So GraphG is what is our system we built, which is implementation of this PSW algorithm. And it has several optimizations on it to make it run faster. See the paper for those. It's in C++, about 8,000 lines of code, and there's also a Java implementation available. And you can all download it from graphg.org. First thing I want to evaluate is the applicability. Can you use this system for anything? Is it any good? Well, it's a little bit hard to quantify. But I have just here listed on the slide all the algorithms that have been implemented since GraphG was released in July. So you can see it's a quite wide range of algorithms, and basically everything you can implement on GraphLab, Pregle, or PowerGraph, or almost everything you can implement efficiently on PSW or GraphG. The next thing, is GraphG fast enough? Can we solve these problems in the reasonable time I promised? To do the experiments, we used a Mac Mini with 8 gigabytes of RAM and 256 gigabyte SSD. For the experiment graphs, we used the same graph as in the PowerGraph paper and typically used in evaluating graph systems. And let me walk you through one row in this table. The last one, which is the Yahoo or AltaVista web graph, which was used by PowerGraph as well. It has 1.4 billion vertices, 6.6 billion edges. It has been split to 50 shards. The number of shards really doesn't matter too much, as long as no shard is too big to fit into memory. And it takes about 35 minutes to do preprocessing for this, and it needs to be done only once. Okay, PowerPoint bug. So, let me introduce some examples. We compared GraphG against some existing systems, and unfortunately, they come in wrong order. First we tried PageRank on the Twitter graph, which was used in the PowerGraph as well, and compared it against Spark, running with 50 machines. And Spark is about 40-50% faster than GraphG. Now, in the paper, you see many other cases where we evaluated PageRank against different systems. Then we implemented a machine learning algorithm called belief propagation and compared it against a Hadoop-based system called Pegasus from CMU. And with 100 machines, it can outperform GraphG at about 20%. Magic factorization is a collaborative filtering algorithm, and in that case, we compared to an in-memory version of GraphLab, of older version of GraphLab, running on 8 cores, and it can outperform GraphG in about run twice faster. Now, the triangle counting is interesting because in this case, we can actually outperform a Hadoop cluster with 1,600 machines. And like Joey told you, this just shows that the map reduce is not the right abstraction for a graph computation. But unfortunately, because there hasn't been a system available which can solve these big graphs, people have had to use Hadoop to do these computations. So I hope to get some remedy for this. So in conclusion, on a Mac Mini, we can solve as big problems as previous systems have solved in a cluster environment. And actually, since we have used GraphG to compute on the actual Twitter graph, which is way bigger than anything you have seen here. And the performance is comparable. So we can solve the same problems in the same ballpark. Now, PowerGraph, which was just presented, it outperforms the previous systems by a wide margin. It's really one magnitude, order of magnitude faster than anything else. So by using 64 machines, 64 more machines, PowerGraph can outperform GraphG 40 times and count triangles 30 times faster. But still, if we go back to the motivation I had in the beginning, that actually you could have a cluster of GraphGs where each machine solves one task time, it's interesting to note that GraphG has really good state-of-the-art performance per CPU. Then about system evaluation, the paper itself has quite a comprehensive evaluation of different properties of GraphG, so I will present only two figures here. So maybe the most important question is that does this scale? When we increase the graph size, does the performance get better or get worse? So what we would like to see is that when the size of the graph increases, we can also the running time increases in the same amount. So to study this, on our x-axis, we have the graph size in the number of edges, And on the y-axis, we have the performance of the a relative performance, which we measure by throughput. And it's really the number of edges the system computes per second. And by using PageRank, again, the paper has several other algorithms which have similar results. We can see that when the graph size grows from 50 million edges or so to 7 billion edges, the relative throughput remains roughly the same. And there are some variation which depends, which is caused by some structural differences in the graphs. And the paper discusses this a bit. This was on SSD, and on hard drive, you can expect maybe two times the running times if the computational cost is low on an application. What about the bottlenecks? Could we make GraphQ work even faster? Well, here I studied two algorithms, connected components and matrix factorization. Connected components is very low computational cost, while matrix factorization is heavy in computational cost. So with the connected components, if we use many threads, so GraphQ is totally fully parallel, we can see that we don't get much benefit because the GraphQ can saturate the SSD I/O even on one or two threads. But if we have an algorithm with higher computational complexity, we can get using four, for example, four CPUs, quite reasonable speed up. All right, so let's go to the next next part of this talk. So these were results on a graph which doesn't change, the structure doesn't change. But in the real world, most graphs actually change all the time. People make friends, people unfriend some. And what we would really like to have is that we could compute continuously on the system while the graph is changing and react to the changes in the computation by considering only the changes in the graph and not restart the whole computation from the beginning. There's some related work on this in the this year's Eurosys, which I collaborate with the Microsoft Research Asia, where we discuss this setting more. But how do we modify this PSW model to work in this evolving graph? You might think it's really rigid. Well, if you recall, we had these shards and intervals. So what we do is that for each shard interval pair, we associate an in-memory edge buffer. And now if we have some process like the Twitter firehose, which generates changes to the graph, we just put the edges to the corresponding edge buffer. And now when we construct the subgraph for a given interval, in addition to considering the edges on the disk in the shards, we check the edge buffers. Now, what happens when we have too many edges to keep in memory? Well, then we need to create these, rewrite these shards on disk. And if some shard becomes too big to fit in memory, we can split it into two. So in this case, the number of shards will increase over time. And really, this rewriting of a shard is not a very complicated operation because you just write the shard which is loaded into memory back to disk by including the buffered edges. At this same point, we can also consider the edges that were deleted and remove them finally from the graph. Let's do evaluation about this. This is a little bit tricky to evaluate because there are no good metrics on what is a good or fast system in this case. And thus, there are no really available systems which can do the same thing. So for this experiment, we did a streaming graph experiment. So on this same Mac Mini, we streamed this Twitter graph with 1.5 billion edges from the disk. And we did it with two ways. First, we tried with 100,000 edges per second, and then 200,000 per edges per second. And soon we will see if we could keep with the pace. And the same time we were streaming the graph in, we were computing page rank. So when new edges were added to the graph, the page ranks of the vertices were changed accordingly. So let's see about the ingest rate. So first of all, we tried to
insert 100,000 edges per second in the graph, and the wiggly line shows the actual interest rate. So we can see during this experiment, while in about 4 hours we added the whole graph into the system could roughly keep on this pace. When the graph becomes bigger, it becomes more expensive to do these rewrites and so on. That's why you see more variation when we go further. But if we try to add 200,000 edges per second, that turns out to be too fast for the system. So this shows some kind of limit of the performance on a Mac Mini. I want to say this 100,000 edges per second is actually a very high rate. Actually, KineoGraph was experimented, evaluated with exactly the same rate on a distributed system. Then let's talk about the computational throughput. So like I said, we actually computed PageRank the same time we were inserting edges to the graph. And with blue line, you see the computational throughput when we added 100,000 edges, and red line when we added or tried to add 200,000 edges per second. And you can see, and the violet line in the top shows the throughput if the graph would have been fixed. So you can see in this evolving graph case, we can reach about 40% of the computational throughput. But you have to realize that in this case, we only compute based on the changes to the graph. So really, we can get quite timely results, even on this kind of mini data system or little data system. So let's go to a conclusion. There are several future work on this, but I will concentrate on one, which I will talk about in my poster tonight. So this work was on the premise that you have a small machine, like a laptop or Mac Mini, which has only 8 or 16 gigabytes of memory. But surely you can now buy a machine which has hundreds of gigabytes of memory, even a terabyte. So running the plain Graph-G or PSW would be very inefficient, because it really doesn't use the memory well. So what instead I'm proposing that, let's say we have this 100 or 200 gigabytes of memory, and we allocate maybe 2 gigabytes for processing the graph from disk, and we use the rest of the memory to store the state of the computation. So for example, if we are running, we might be able to run like 50 or 100 different tasks on the same machine, and that way it uses the memory very efficiently. What if we want to do thousands or tens of thousands of tasks in parallel? Well, then we buy more machines and let each of the machines do the same thing. Linear scalability. And please come to the poster tonight to discuss more about this. Conclusion, this parallel sliding windows algorithm, it enables processing of large graphs with very low number of random accesses, and that's why it works both on SSD and hard drive. For systems researchers, I think this is now a nice data point to test their bigger, large-scale systems, to see how they compare against Graph-G, because it can actually solve the same problems. Maybe a takeaway, this little bit opposite as was given in the first talk today. People may think they are restricted to the rack, but actually, maybe you don't need the rack at all. Instead, if you think about better data structures and algorithms, you can maybe do the same problems on much less resources. So just to repeat, you can all the code and examples and the benchmarks are available in graph-g.org in open source license. Thank you.
Nice talk. I'm Mohit from Wisconsin. So I was wondering, have you compared parallel sliding window algorithm with operating system techniques like memory mapping a file and using demand paging or using SSDs as a cache?
I haven't tried SSD as a cache because the code isn't available like this SSD alloc. But basically, on their papers, they say that they can do maybe tens of thousands of accesses per second, and I know it's just too little. For the memory mapping, well, I have a feeling that you really need more control on how to load the graph. And for example, I have tried to use just let the system do the file system caching. And because I pass over the whole graph on all time, the caching really doesn't work, because it's kind of the data in the cache is flushed out on a one pass.
Okay. Just one more question. What was the size of the shard when you mentioned that SSD bandwidth was saturated with just two threads?
It's almost an. It doesn't matter the shard size too much. They're usually some hundreds of megabytes.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
I'll ask you a similar question, Terence Kelly, HP Labs. I'll ask you a similar question to the one I asked the previous speaker. Are you interested in comparisons with just very simple, frugal, elementary, single-threaded solvers? Because most of the graphs in table one will fit comfortably in main memory on a fairly expensive laptop, but still a laptop. And there are two dimensions of comparisons that you might find interesting. One is performance, but another is just the simplicity of the code. So for instance, your triangle counter, just the triangle counter, excluding the platform on which it runs, is about 350 lines of code. You can write one in 100 lines of code. Right, so there are at least two ways in which I guess the null hypothesis that I wish more graph analysis platform papers would falsify is that you're better off writing your own code.
Well, you can see that actually the paper we did on in-memory version of this, which loaded everything in memory and then did the computation in memory. And so you can see the paper for the comparison. So if you don't take into account the time to load the graph into memory and actually write the results back to disk, which you usually need, then in-memory version is maybe 10 times faster or 20 times faster on PageRank or something with very low computational complexity. But if you take the whole workflow into account that actually you need to load the data and write it back, then there's not such big difference. But for example, I have used this to compute on the real Twitter graph. I cannot say how big it is, but I can say you cannot fit it into the laptop memory.